Hi, everyone. Welcome to Comically Exposed, episode 24. We are a podcast about solving crimes of humanity from OCD, and we talk comedy, too. So I am one of your hosts, Heather Nye, and my other very talented special host is...
Gabby Blackman, uncomfortable with the compliments.
And this is a special edition because we have a very talented comedian, writer, editor, you know, that's Los Angeles based. He's part of the sketch team Redacted, which is the name, not some sort of secret code for something. Every second Wednesday at the PAC Theater in Los Angeles at 9 p.m. So welcome, Winston Carter.
Hey, happy to be here. Hey. Thanks for having me.
Well, welcome, 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 my friend. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Nice to meet y'all. It's good to be. I'm literally the second I started talking, I'm like, oh, now I'm so anxious. Oh, no. Like it all.
Good, good. Yeah. If any one of us figures out what to do with our hands during the podcast, legally they have to tell the other person. So I just have questions right off the bat.
Number one,
here we go. So your sketch group Redacted.
Yes.
How did y'all meet and how long ago was that?
Okay, so we were put together. We're a house team at the PAC Theater, so there were open auditions. This was the first round of teams post-pandemic. Is that right? I think that's right. I'm pretty sure that's right. So it's a bunch of people.
We believe you.
Yeah,
we believe
I'm just going to say it's history. So yeah, the PAC Theater in LA had before had auditions that were required taking classes. At post-pandemic, obviously with everything being crazy, they were like, we're going to throw that out the window. So anybody can audition. They have a really great audition format, which is you do a cold read of a sketch. They like you submit a packet and they read that in a video. And then you get brought in for a cold reading a sketch with like random people in front of a small group. And then the second half of the in-person is you have a minute to make people laugh in front of a real crowd. And there are judges in the crowd. But it's also you can pack it with friends. It's a great show. It's such a fun show to do. And then we got put together and we've had some changes up, some slight changes here and there, people leaving, people being added, but we've been together for 2 years, so it's been great.
Wow.
That is so cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the best.
That's good. What is your guys' writing process like? Like, does each person bring a sketch to it? Do you guys brainstorm together?
It's a little bit of both. It is right now. It's very much like there is collaboration, but it's just kind of inspired by you. There's no like set in stone way to do anything for us. So we have written sketches fully as a team, like kind of in the room, everyone pitching on ideas and things kind of write themselves. We've also usually it's someone brings an idea or a sketch and then we'll all like, you know, we have two writing meetings and we'll all pitch ideas, give notes, give feedback and then get rewrites. And then also like I end up breaking out and trying to write with people because I'm terrible at writing. And I hate doing it unless I have a deadline of someone doing it with me. So I'll be like, hey, I have this idea. Could you want to write it together? And it's a lot of me like being like, I'll look at my notes and just be like, does anyone think this is funny? Oh, you think this is funny? Okay, let's write that together. Like, that's the process.
Yeah, so relatable. That's awesome. So is it a brand new sketch show every 2 weeks?
It's every... the second Wednesday of every month. Maybe I put that wrong.
Yes.
So it's one new one a month. Yeah. And then we usually end up having 1 month off. Although that's going to change because that was the PAC Theater was at the Broadwater Theater, was like a stage of the Broadwater, and that just changed. So the PAC Theater should be running full year because they took a break for LA Fringe every year before. But the PAC Theater just moved and it's got a new theater space and it's really great. I had my first show there last night and it was awesome. So it's great.
Hey.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Great.
So I don't know if you know, but on this podcast, we talk about mentals and the fact that we all have perfected them. The fact that you're here must mean that you have perfected yours as well.
Yeah.
Good.
I am perfect. Great.
So just,
yes, I am perfect. Good. Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
I'm glad that you got that. I was edging towards there, and I'm glad that you knew where I was headed. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, Heather and I, not to brag, but we have OCD. Mm-hmm. And yourself, what's going on with your mental
I have ADD. Yes. Basically, untrue. Yeah, yeah. Who knew? Who knew?
No, I mean, same thing. Let's go. Yeah.
And then I have OCD that's pretty minor. Like, I'm pretty lucky on the OCD range because, like, mine are very hideable and, like, mostly internal. And then anxiety as well. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have all the fun okay. ones. You do have a lot of fun ones.
Yeah.
I also have generalized anxiety disorder, just not to brag, but I do. I just wanted to kind of go back to you saying that you have the low end of OCD and yes. saying that it's all internal and yeah. Easily maskable, which
yeah.
to me is exhausting. How about yourself?
It is. Yeah, it's not, I don't find it super exhausting. It's honestly... when I was younger, it was much more difficult, I think, is how I feel about it. Pre me going to therapy, everything was a lot harder. Is maybe the, because I was like carrying around so much of like this other stress and all this stuff. So all those things in my mind, I don't think about the OCD stuff I do. Like, it doesn't occur to me until I'm like, oh, I'm moving my shoulders a lot right now, huh? Like, and I'm like, oh yeah, dude, just relax, calm down. So yeah. It can be exhausting, but I just don't think about it until it's like, oh, I'm blinking my eyes, what am I doing? And like, until I'm fully in it. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so your OCD has like physical body manifestations? Is that
very, yeah? Yes. Yeah, they come out as nervous tics. So I will clear my throat obsessively. And they were like, well, you have a post-nasal drip. And someone's like, yeah, but... One clearing your throat an hour takes care of that. The other 20 you do are not that. Or it'll come out as like blinking is a thing that happens a lot to me. Like, or, you know, just like these small little bits that I'll notice. And I'm like, oh, yep, I'm doing that tick. All right, cool, cool. But then in general, once I acknowledge that it's happening, that starts calming it down. And then I drink like 5 glasses of water. And then that kind of, surprise, surprise, water's important for your brain. Who knew? Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, so real. Anybody else really want to drink water right now?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to drink some water right now.
It was a good reminder. Suggestion.
It could truly change your life.
Uh-huh. This weekend, I was hanging out with my family. My mom reminded my sister and I that when we were upset as children, she would say, like, I hear you're upset. Do you think perhaps you're thirsty? Why don't you go drink a glass of water and then we can talk about it? And we'd be like, it's not the water. I'll tell you what it's not. It's not the water. Drink, drink, drink. Everything's fine. We don't have to talk about anything.
I'm from Oklahoma, so that was like sweet tea and it did not help. It was not helpful at all.
So caffeine, sugar.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing the problem as far as anxiety goes.
You want a Coke? You want a Coke to calm down? Sure. Nope, I'm worse.
So also we were talking about before the podcast, all you listeners are jealous, that when your anxiety in general is raised, the OCD and the tics are also raised. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything kind of like, so it all ramps up for me, it feels like together, like it's all kind of like a little package that heats up together and cools down together. So yeah, as my anxiety raises, then everything else, like I have one that's like really small, which is like I'll like clench and unclench my toes in my shoe. I don't know if anybody else has, like, I will literally like clench up my toes and unclench them. And then that gets directly tied to my claustrophobia. And then it's all starts cycling. And I'm like, well, all right, we're just off to the races now. Cool. My shoes, they're trapped in, my feet are trapped in my shoes and I'm trapped in this whatever.
Yeah.
Oh no. And it's all one thing.
Yes.
Yeah. I have something similar to that where I'll put on a sweater and all of a sudden I'll just have this moment where I'm like, my head isn't going through the hole right now fast enough. Yep. And then all of a sudden it'll set off a panic attack of I can't breathe. I'm going to die. Yep. They're going to find my dead body somewhere. you know,
I never think about the dead
with a sweater on your head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine usually goes to death. Oh. But yeah, that's.
Oh, mine is much more like I'm going to be trapped here forever. Maybe I won't ever die, but I'll just live like the. Like if I'm in too cramped of a spot, like I remember I went to one of the like a haunted house, you know, one of these like LA, like really over the top. It was, I think, by Blumhouse, like haunted house things. And to enter it, they had this thing. Uh-huh. And I've done one of these since. And I was very brave, and I was like, "You're not gonna get trapped in this because there's 1,000 people here." But it's like 2 inflatable balloons in a hallway, and you walk between them. It's as bad as it sounds. Oh, God. If you have claustrophobia, it's the worst thing you could do. And I walked into it because you're following someone, and then they get like the thing closes, and then you're alone, and it's. It wasn't even, it was more like, oh, I'll just have to live like this now. I live here. It's never died. It's always, well, this is where I'm at now forever. And that's like what life's going to be. Sorry.
You know, the classic tale. Yeah. Just living between 2 balloons, the way our forefathers did.
Yeah. Just making good on the earth. Like trying to raise some plants. Maybe I'll get a cat one day. All in the balloon. Oh.
Yep.
So horrifying. And it reminded me, I used to lead backpacking trips in Yosemite. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I had a bunch of kids who were really gung-ho at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, settle down. Like, let's nap. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Let's really get into it. But there's this set of caves that's kind of near the base of Yosemite Falls. And they're spider caves. They're very small. And there's one part. I don't like any. Which
there's
is,
2 words, both bad. They're both horrible words.
Oh, wait for it. Wait for it. Because part of the cave is called the birth canal. Yep. Because it's so tight. It's like being born. No. And I said, I'll stay outside with the claustrophobic kids.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. No.
I'll watch caving videos occasionally to like, you know, do y'all ever do this? Why? Like, so my claustrophobia is strong. I will like, I'll like kind of like be like, well, it's like a horror movie for me. Like, I'm watching this. It's like people, and in my mind, I'm like, someone uploaded this video. So I know they live through this. But then I got onto one that was
like. You don't think it's found footage?
No, I got onto one that was like TikTok. It was like YouTube videos of like caving deaths. And I was like, because it was like analyzing people who hadn't made it. And I was like, oh no, this now I've gone down fully. I'm not going to sleep. This is the worst. What have I done to myself?
Oh God. Oh God.
And they're, if you think they're bad, they're as bad as you think. They're really horrible. It's truly tragic.
And in a weird way, what you've done is expose yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I feel like, well, I'm like, I'm pushing myself through it. So then when I have to like, when I'm on a plane and can't see outside for a second and feel like I'm going to lose my mind, I can be like, well, I'm not caving. I'm not in this weird, horrible.
Yes.
And now that's what I'm going to do tonight. I guarantee you that's what happens.
Amazing. Power of suggestion. I do. Okay. 2 things. One, the difference between a horror movie and those videos where the people didn't make it out alive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Big, very big. Yes. Fair. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
One is, some might say fiction.
Yeah.
And then, the other thing, I don't remember the other thing. Oh, I don't know. I just wanted to add my claustrophobia thing because you guys added yours, which is drinking water. I get very claustrophobic when drinking water. Huh. Yeah. So I got to switch it up so that, you know, like I have various different straws, various different like cups and things to try and trick myself. Because, if you don't drink enough water, the anxiety gets worse and then it's harder to drink water. It's a fun thing. But let's talk about plane flight.
Okay. Yes. My favorite and least favorite thing. It's not my least favorite thing. That's hyperbole. Is that the hyperbole? It's my favorite. I love aircraft. I'm a huge aviation nerd. My dad was an airline mechanic. So like I grew up around planes. Yeah. I grew up traveling. And then in my like early 20s, And then through like up until like my like I'm now in my entering my late 30s, and like it went from like this fun thing I love to, oh no, this thing causes me to have panic attacks. But I still love it, and it's like kind of both. Yeah, so I've had a couple big panic attacks. The biggest one, I don't know if you guys, I'll tell the story if that's all right. I was.
Yes, please.
Yeah, please do.
So I went to China to save dogs. So that's where we're starting at. I was in Beijing to save dogs from being eaten. That is actually what the dogs were on a truck to go to a dog meat festival, and they were saved by this group, and I wasn't working at the time. So I was like, yeah, I'll go to China for free. So me and a friend go to China. We're there for 4 days. We're leaving. We haven't met these dogs yet. We go to the airport. It's midnight. The woman who I'd been talking to, who is like arranging all this, we meet the dogs. So there's 4 dogs each, and we have to fly through Moscow back to New York, then back to LA. And she's like, oh, let's get drinks. Like, we'll go get a bunch of beers in the Beijing airport. At this point, I don't know. Alcohol is the worst thing you could possibly do to your body when you have an anxiety problem. And then, so there's three dogs under the plane that I'm responsible for, and one that I have with me. Never met him. New dog. He's like a small poodle. Very sweet. It's in a little bag. And I get on this plane, and after drinking, my body clock is all over the place. I'm sitting next to someone I don't know because they don't let 2 people with dogs sit next to each other, which makes sense. But it is like I'm just sitting next to a stranger, and I'm on it's a Russian carrier Aeroflot. Their planes are very cramped, and I'm a big dude, and I proceed to start having easily the worst anxiety panic episode I've ever had in my life. And this flight's 8 hours, Beijing to Moscow.
Oh, no.
It's middle of the night. This young woman next to me, I wish I had her name. She was so great. She was so sweet. She would watch the dog for me because I was like getting up and walking the full plane. I would go to the back and just like kind of try to stretch out. The flight attendants were giving me orange juice and water, but also I've already ingested a ton of alcohol, and I'm like, oh no, this is not going to stop. And then in the back of my head, the worst part is I'm like, oh, and then I get to Moscow, and then I have a 12-hour flight. And then in LA, I have another 6-hour flight in New York from to LA. I was like, this is just the very beginning of this long trip. So, it was rough. Luckily, I was able to power through, like focus up and be like, all right, you just have to. And I have like a fear of my ears. Like if I'm sick at all, they won't regulate. And I play music too. So like, I have this nightmare that I'm going to land in a plane one time and my eardrums are going to explode, which I've had it happen. I've had one not regulate. Your eardrums don't explode. You just have that weird, like you can barely hear thing. But it doesn't like, and even if they explode, there's like, this heals. This is fine. It's not a big deal. But in my brain, I'm like, and then my brain will leak out and I'm going to, that's it for me. So yeah, that was the worst.
Love those intrusive thoughts.
Yeah. So the next time I flew, I was like, I would talk to my doctor and I was like, hey, here's the deal. I'm not trying to ask you for Ativan, but when I fly, I've been using weed and that's not legal everywhere. So and they were like, yeah, absolutely. No problem. It was such a short conversation. And I was so mad that I could have avoided all this. Ugh.
Oh no.
So that's my tip.
Ativan. Okay. First of all, thank you for telling
it.
Horrifying. Just to have a panic attack that early onto such a long trip.
It was bad.
Oh my God. And then to be responsible for 4 dogs
that
you've never met.
Yeah. It was really bad. It was really, really bad. It was 27 hours of flying in a 24-hour clock time span because we were going against like time zones. And it was just like, ugh, it was horrible.
Oh, yeah.
And also,
it stresses me out thinking about it.
Yeah, okay, sorry. We can move on.
No, I apologize. I was tell this story? And now I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, let your toes spread out. Everything's cool, man. Everything's cool. I was going to say, Ativan. Mm-hmm. Holy mackerel. Is that not the business?
It's really great. It's really
great. For me. Yeah. It just is like, the thing is though, I won't let myself take enough out of Van because I am so paranoid about getting addicted to anything in this world. That makes sense. So I will only, I'll like do halves.
Oh, right? I'm in the same. Oh yeah. I'm in this. I was on ones. They gave me ones and I was only taking like a quarter of those. Cause I was like, well, half is too much. So I have like, when I travel, I have it in the thing. And then this is a pro tip. Cause I found that like, I'd have these little, you know, pill bottles in my bag. Cause it's always in my messenger bag with me just in case I need it. Or if you put your pills, cause if you'll notice, like there's like the white residue, cause the pills are rattling around. If you put your pills in like a sandwich bag inside of that, they don't rattle around. So it's like, I would have, all these little chips and like someone would watch me take it and I'd be like licking my finger and like hitting it. And that's the thing I found out about Ativan is it can be absorbed through your tongue and gums. You don't actually need to swallow it. It's faster that way because it's made for people who are like,
I put it under my tongue.
Yeah. People who can't, who like are so into it that they can't even swallow. It's made, you could just shove it in their mouths and it'd get in there.
Yeah.
It's the business. Oh my God, this is the amazing. Ooh, man. Cause I also like, I get bad, you know, like the first day of work or if I'm like acting on something and I'm going to go on a shoot that night before, I'm just like, well, I'm just not going to sleep. That's just not in the cards for me. And this was like, yeah, there's a pill you can take and then you sleep. And I was like, of course there is. Of course that exists. So
I know.
Ativan's huge for that.
But oh God, it's amazing. Yeah. And yeah, but I love that for the longest time, you're just like white knuckling yourself to be like, well, I'm going to sleep or I'm not going to sleep. But probably the best way to sleep is to just know that I'm not going to sleep. And then you're like doing that in your head. Like, yay.
Uh-huh. There was a night where I was like pre-Ativan where I remember being like, I can't remember. It was like I was going, I think I might have been going on because I play music and I was going on like a little tour. And if I remember it, like, this is not a good look. I like drank a half bottle of wine and then took a bunch of weed because I was like, I gotta get just sleep. It's like 2 a.m. Uh-huh. None of it works. And I was like, now I'm like, oh, one Ativan. And at least it might not keep me asleep, but it'll get me to sleep. You know, that's the thing. Like, it just at least lets you fall asleep.
Yes. Yeah. There's like an initial hill. And then as soon as you get over that, then it's.
Yeah.
Mostly downhill. I mean, I also have insomnia, so then I'll just wake up sometimes and be awake. Oh, I know what I was going to ask you about. Well, two things. One, I keep Ativan on my key ring.
Oh, that's
but
smart.
But I put the pills in. It's like a big pill case, mm-hmm. and there's only 3 adorable little Ativan in there. And I'm realizing, as you spoke, they're probably just powder at this point. So I need to do the Ziploc baggie.
And having a little vial of powder on you running around the world is not the best look. I mean, I'm all for doing whatever you want, but you're gonna get interrogated at some point.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to travel and meet people. So I like it to be TSA, security, potentially police of other countries. That just seems like a good time, especially if you're claustrophobic.
Yeah. With 4 strange dogs.
I can't go to prison. Let's just be very clear. I've watched the videos. Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm like, you ever put me in prison, I'm not going to be around because you can't. Yeah. I can't be locked in a thing not me.
Mm-mm. No. How about solitary confinement?
No. Yeah. I don't want any part of it, but just the idea of like, oh, you're going to go to sleep and they're going to like lock the door behind you. I'm like, no, not me. Yes. No, that's never going to happen. Nope.
But even that order of things would be better. Like if I was asleep and then they locked the doors, I would be like, cool.
Fine. That's fine.
Yeah, but the fact that they're like, be in this teeny, teeny, tiny space, see the cement, see the bars, night.
Nope. Not for me.
It's not for me too. Mm-mm. What kind of music do you play?
I'm in a band that plays rock and roll, like punk adjacent, and we dress like monsters. It's called Drek and the Swamp Rats. It's great. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's very fun.
What do you play? Kind of instruments? That was
I play drums. So there's one drum here. Yeah. And then there's guitars and stuff. I play a bunch, but in that band, I play drums.
What is your costume then?
I'm Frankenstein within the. I should be like I'm Frankenstein within this band, or I know Frankenstein. It's there. How serious we are about the. It's all Frankenstein. That's the answer. Or Frankenstein's monster, if you want to get.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. Oh my god.
Yeah. Oh, I've had plenty of people bring it up, and I'm like, well, don't do it. Well, if Frankenstein's my dad, then my name is also something Frankenstein. So that's fine.
Yeah.
True.
You're Mr. Frankenstein. He's Dr. Frankenstein. Yeah. No, please. This is how we are the Frankenstein.
Mr. Frankenstein is my dad. Please, that's my father. I'm just Frankenstein. Yeah,
I didn't go rampaging for 8 years to be referred to as doctor. Okay.
Yeah.
That's so cool. How many people are in the band?
It's four of us. It took me a second because we did have five, and that's four. Yeah, so it's Dracula is the front man, Wolfman is the lead guitarist, and then Mummy is the bassist. And it's great. You can check that out anywhere. Like Drac Swamp Rats, wherever you find stuff. And yeah, we have albums up on wherever you listen to music.
Drac is in D-R-A-C. Drac?
That's it. Yep, Drac and the Swamp Rats.
I think I've seen it on Instagram, too, because I thought it was great.
We're around. Yeah, I post about it. I mean, obviously, we're
coming. I see a lot of stuff.
We're coming up on the holiday season for us, so it's going to be a busy October, September, October.
How many weddings have you guys done?
None. We've been asked, and it's always like someone's like, we're going to get married on like, Halloween's on a Friday night and we're going to get married that day. And we're like, well, we'd love to do that. But also that's like the best time for us to have a normal show. You know, it's like, we would love to be at your wedding, but you can't do it the night that we have to be playing other places. But yeah. Surprisingly done. Yeah.
Yeah. That just seems like missed opportunity, people. If you're getting married and you're looking for a band, like I can't think of a more fun. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, we're a good time. Yeah. It's certainly, it's an experience, but it is also like, we're like, it's a rock and roll show. And I don't know if people want that. Like I don't know if you want this much fake blood spit on you when you're in your wedding best, but yeah,
dude, it's really honestly, fun. Heck yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah. There's an anxiety story there too. Oh my God. Another cluster. We played a show in a basement last tour. Yeah. Last year. We were in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is where I'm from, and we were playing a show, like a DIY venue called Barkingham Palace. It's an awesome place, super cool. These people's house, normal house on the top, and then their basement is like made into a awesome venue, which is all things I'm on board for, like a weird, cool punk venue, and it's like packed in. But thinking about it like I had nights I didn't sleep in the lead up to the show because I was like, wait a minute. We're going to be in this basement and there's going to be like 100 people in there. And it's not like a venue. It's just like a room. And yeah. And then we go, we get to the place and my friends go down there. And I had been telling them like, this is making me stressed out. I was like, I'm going to do the show. But the second the show is over, I'm getting out of that basement. And they go down there like, yeah, it's worse. It's worse than you thought. Because it was like,
oh my God,
it was two steps down and then a back door to an exit. So that's good. So there's a door outside. So like from the basement, there's a straight door outside, but then it's a 90 degree right turn down five steps. And then that's the basement. And I was like, so it's like, you have to like turn around. And then, so we play the show. It goes great. I'm not drinking because I take a little Ativan to make me get through everything. And I'm like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And we're playing the show and I'm upstairs and then there's the band after us is playing and I can hear them. I'm like selling merch and like hanging out. And then the music stops abruptly and I'm like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden people are like, get out of the basement. And I'm like, what is going on? And it is that someone had like run into the water heater and there was gas leaking in the basement. So we all go outside. We like grab our stuff and get the hell out of there. And my band is like, I am so happy that did not happen during our set. I was like, I would have murdered people running for the door. I would have like charged through people.
Yes. Ooh,
man. I do. But that was another Ativan success story where
Were you just floating?
I was just like,
yeah, it's cool, man.
I was like, no, because everyone's like, I've seen old friends who had like have not seen the band before, and they're like, you want a drink? And I was like, I'm good. They're like, well, I'm like, I need to do is not mess with like that. I'm not nervous right now. That's all I have to do.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But, this episode brought to you by Ativan, by the way. Ativan. Hit us up. Yeah. Give us money. Give us Ativan. You can pay us in Ativan.
Yeah.
That's horrifying. I also like realized, I don't know if I realized I was too old to go to certain venues anymore, but it was like, if there weren't multiple exits that were clear and, you know, you could see them, I was like, I don't care how much I love this performer. I don't care if I'm in the front row. I don't care how much money I spent. It's not happening.
That's a responsible way to live your life. That's a very, what I do is I just go white knuckle it. I'll just deal with it. Like, that's my brain. Just like, I guess I'll suffer. I guess, cause sometimes it's like with these, like I would never go to a show with those. I would follow your rules, but in playing them, I'm like, well, I'm kind of stuck doing this thing. I guess I'm just gonna, and the upside is like for music, it's distracting. Like I love doing like performing it so much that I'm not thinking about anything else during the show. I'm just having a blast and like, you know, spitting beer on people and losing my mind. So like, but then the second it was over, I'm like, I got to get the hell out of this.
Yes.
Oh man, that was
a bad. You're like, I need a quarter of Ativan and an open space. Yeah. That's what I need in this
I bailed and like went straight for the backyard and was like just standing outside. I'd be like, are you all right? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I just need to not be down there anymore.
Yes.
Which sucks. Who doesn't love a basement? Oh my God. But now when I think about that, they only have one exit. I don't like them very much.
Oh, listen, if there are two, maybe three people in that basement, I can hang out for a bit. But as soon as there is one person more, I start to think about if we all go for the door at the same time and then people get wedged and I can't climb over them because obviously I'm going to climb over them to get out. And then what? That's how I die? No.
I cry scraping and clawing at humans to try to claustrophobia is the real demon in my life right now, but it's fine. It is basements are horrible. What's weird is I'm in a basement right now. Like my apartment has like it's two floors and one of them is in the basement, but I realize now I'm like, oh, but there's an exit here, like there's a secondary front door for our apartment. I'm like, oh man, because if this didn't have that, because otherwise it's just a spiral staircase. I was like, I would have never lived here. I would have never been okay with that. But but it works.
Yeah. And you have a window.
Yeah. Oh, and that's a whole other. Yeah, because we're close to like it's like the street is at an angle. So this is at the front end of the building. This is fully underground, and then as you go further towards the back of the building, it starts getting less and less. But
it's a daylight basement.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. Yeah. I'm very lucky to have a daylight basement. Yeah. I don't need basements. Ugh, why? Why are we doing this?
Spiral staircases. Board it all up.
Oh, if you go to one of those ones in like Europe and it's like in a medieval castle, they're like, oh, well, you have to take the spiral staircase up to the roof of this church. And you're like, no, I'm not. I'm just, okay, is it a roof? I've seen a roof.
No.
I don't need to see this roof.
Yeah.
Because they're like, they're like the tiny...
Yes, because they're made for teeny tiny people that used to be around. As like, I went to the Duomo, the top of the Duomo, and nobody told me.
That's exactly what I was talking about, is that's exactly the experience. And I was like, they said, oh, well, there's an elevator, or there's, and I was like, both those sound horrible. I don't need
horrendous.
To go there.
Horrendous. So I was in San Francisco Sketchfest 2 years ago or something at this point. My family came out fabulous. And we stayed in this hotel, which was like super old on the ninth floor. It is a spiral staircase or the tiniest elevator where like one person with luggage can fit. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like pre-war. War, like just, pre-revolutionary war, just no.
Yeah.
What did you choose? Which one?
The stairs, because at least okay. I could fall down them.
Oh, interesting. I was over a year ago in Italy with my family, and we had rented an Airbnb because my mom has mobility issues that had a elevator, but it was all those, they're all converted. So it's like, it was the center of like a spiral staircase, but one of those beautiful, huge ones, you know, like a grand, like yes. circular staircase. And then in the middle yes. was an elevator that they had at like retrofitted. And it was tiny in the same, like she could get in there and the walker, and then you kind of had to close the doors to your best ability, and then it would kind of go. I loved that elevator though, because even though I was enclosed, like it had like a mesh, it wasn't in a tube. It was like a mesh, like metal was the walls. So I could like still breathe and get fresh air. And I was like, okay, this I can deal with. It's the concrete tube of an elevator that I'm not on board with. If you think about it too much, like Vegas, those express elevators, we're going to ruin a lot of things for people on this podcast today is what I'm realizing. We're going to have a lot of people new reasons to have anxiety.
Yeah.
Listen,
that's the whole point.
That's exactly what I was
saying. The whole point yeah. is to ruin it, to ruin it all, to basically live inside your house.
Yep.
With all the doors closed, except for the windows being open, so you have a way to look outside if you have claustrophobia, you know. And then we'll start wearing shoe boxes on our tissue boxes on our feet.
Yeah.
Collect our fingernails. You know, the normal stuff.
You say we will, but I have been doing some of those things quite some time. The other thing I have is heights. How are you guys with heights? Heather?
Me?
Yeah, go for it.
No.
Winston pointed, so I was like, it can't be back at me.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, is it me?
You know the fun game we play on podcasts where we silently point at each other?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that nobody can see when it's on an audio recording.
It's the best. It's the best. So you don't like heights. Nobody likes heights. We're all agreed.
Is that the end of that segment?
Yeah. No, I don't have a problem with heights other than, you know, the minor intrusive thoughts that happen from them. Like, what if I fell off, you know, if I got too close or a bird sweeps in and then I fall off the building and then, you know, other things like that. But my mind's a little bit creative, but it depends on what gets sticky, you know, what my mind latches onto before I get to the compulsions. But heights aren't that much of a problem. I love flying. I've been flying since I was like 6 months old. So
I like the extreme heights.
I'm sorry, I just bragged a lot.
No, that was great. I loved it.
No, that was great. Yeah. I like the big heights. I'm fine with plain height. I'm fine with like being in a tall building doesn't. It's like maybe, but like 15 feet off the ground, I'm not gonna love. Like that's for me. Like really? like the heights where I'm like shit, I would survive that is like very frustrating.
I am exactly the opposite. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to have a mangled leg or something. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Oh. But my problem with heights is that I have an urge to jump.
Okay.
All the time.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you guys get this when you're driving and there's the oncoming traffic and you're just like, but what if I just turned the old wheel and see what happens?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. I 100%. I'm certainly not just like trying to make you feel better about that. Yeah, absolutely. No.
That's how I always drive. Yeah. You know, actually, most of the time it's like when I'm driving, it's like I start to visualize, OK, if that guy moves too fast over here and then if he bumps into this person over there, then this collision is going to happen. And then, so how do I maneuver around the collision? The thing that didn't happen, I'm planning how to recover from it.
That's just your plan being it.
Yeah.
It might be, I mean, on another level, because sometimes it gets a little like I'm in a movie.
Okay.
And it feels like I'm in Fast Furious, like movie, you know, where car explosions happen and, you know, all of a sudden my car is like flying off the freeway and, you know, so I have to maneuver through that. Uh-huh. How do I maneuver back onto the road and then head to my destination? Uh-huh. You know, these are very important things in my mind.
Yeah. If there's a gangland shootout, how do I get to Ralph's? How do I get back to the grocery store?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I have so many questions, Heather, which I think should just be my nickname. I have so many questions. One, is this real or is this just a bit?
It's real.
Okay, two.
I used to think about it more often, yeah. But yeah.
Is this catastrophizing as a cognitive, not dissociation, Gabby, think of the word. I don't know, cognitive.
Diffusion?
Wronging.
Oh, wronging. Maybe. I'm a really good driver.
Listen, I believe you. It's the part where things are exploding and we're in gangland shoot 'em outs and Fast and Furious has come into play, which is different from how I know you and what I thought of your life. So I'm also wondering, because I know coming up with plans B, C, D, E, et cetera, is very OCD. So I was just wondering how you feel about that.
I've gotten better. It's not really my intrusive thoughts that I have that much anymore. But I know that when I do catastrophize, I tend to go bigger than I admit. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. Okay. That is I'm in my head.
If that's like a coping mechanism, I'm just going to talk about things I don't know about anything about. Is that a coping mechanism?
That's okay. We do it all the time.
Because it might be, because there is an element, like I do this sometimes where I'm like, I'll start freaking out like on a plane. And then I'm like, well, I'm trapped in the plane. Uh-huh. And I part of it is like, if I can push it far enough into where it becomes absurd, then I'm reminded of how absurd just the base thought is. Does that like, so if you're like, and then this is going to flip over there, you're like, well, none of that's going to happen. And then it, even though it might not like, it's a small way of like walking yourself back a little bit. I don't know if that's your, I do have done elements of that before.
That sounds like CBT to me, but sorry, Heather, continue.
No. It does. It sounds like an imaginal thing, you know, where you're kind of catastrophizing, like when I was got my fully impacted wisdom teeth pulled out a few years ago, and I didn't need them to be pulled out, which was fun. I hated planning for the surgery, and my therapist made me do an imaginal where I had to write a script. But he just laughed because every time I wrote one, I always died in surgery.
Yeah.
That was the ultimate end is death, right? Yeah. And for some odd reason, you know, it's like the instruments go, you know, when they're cutting into my gums, they actually slice through my cheek and then it comes up through my eye. Okay. And then, you know, and then I die. But at first I have to struggle for at least a few days, maybe in a coma, you know, while my, you know, they're unable to stop the bleeding for some reason. And then I get an infection and then there's, you know, a slow death and then I die. So, yeah.
But that didn't happen.
It's a fun imaginal.
So that's great.
It didn't happen.
Right? Can all agree.
Also didn't have to lose him.
Yeah.
You know,
that's very frustrating. That's incredibly frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, because I couldn't see him. So, you know, technically, they could have just put me out and under, made me pay thousands of dollars, and then I could still have him.
Oh.
But I would never know because they're under my gums.
You can't, like, feel that they're – you can feel that they're gone, though, right? Like, nope. you don't have, like there's no, like, last thing. Oh, nope. Man, I just had surgery, too, and I'm like, well, what if they were lying to me? What if my gallbladder is still in there and I just don't know it? They just made a bunch of fun holes. Shit.
Yeah.
I was going to ask.
It's a new thing that they're doing. It's a new medical thing that they're just kind of doing these mystery things. You know, it's like.
You guys.
They didn't take anything out.
That surgery. Is a thing.
Yeah.
The placebo surgeries are an actual thing. It is like a.
They are.
They better not have done that. I'm going to be pissed off. I saw that bill. They better have taken some stuff out of me.
Well, okay. Well, a couple of things. One is it was like a scammy thing, and you generally have to be semi-awake for it because they perform it. Uh-huh. There's like a lot of fake blood. They like – it looks like they're going into you, but they're not actually going into you, like that sort of thing. So that's a scam.
Oh. Okay.
The second one is for knee surgeries, they found that people who had a placebo knee surgery where they would like cut the knee – but not actually do anything inside of it and sew it back up. had just as much of a response to the surgery as people who had had like the full extensive surgery. Yeah, man.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Wow.
But who knows? Yeah. I mean, maybe that has something to do with the anesthesia, you know, like ketamine therapy. Yeah. Like maybe they were just depressed and afterwards they weren't depressed anymore.
Well, I've been eating crazy fried foods. Yeah. So whatever they did works because no gallbladder issues. So it's great.
That's
so maybe my placebo, maybe it's still in there. It's just pumping away.
Wait, so what's the tie-in between fried foods and gallbladders?
Gallbladders hold bile, which is something that assists. It's your liver makes bile and then it dumps it into your gallbladder. Your gallbladder stores it, I think maybe like refines it. And then when you eat fried foods, your bile is what helps your body digest the oil, like all the fat and everything that's in – it's any fatty foods. So gallbladders – so when you have gallstones or gallbladder disease or something, stones develop. When your gallbladder squeezes to push bile in, it takes the stones and that becomes super painful and can cause problems. So they cut your gallbladder out and your liver just dumps it straight in and then your body can just readjust without it.
Oh, so it's –
in some people. Some people have like belly problems forever. But for the most part, your body's just like, oh, I don't have that thing anymore. Okay, I'll just figure out how to work around it.
Huh. Bodies are amazing.
That's really what I was going to say.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take your.
No, no, no.
You want to say it?
I thought it was cool that we had about to say it at the same time. I do have to say, I remembered it is cognitive distortions. That's the word I was trying for.
Distortion.
And since I mentioned CBT, I want to say that is, cognitive behavioral therapy. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is.
Okay. I just realized cognitive came up twice and it was bothering me. anyhow.
It's weird. I had very little anxiety having surgery. I will say that. Very little. They also obviously gave me stuff for it, but way less than I thought I would. It all came after. After like the reality of everything that had happened hit me. But like in advance, I was like, whatever. Let's just do. Because I was like, it's very much like I was like, there's no, I'm not going to do this. Like, they're like getting ready for surgery. I'm like, well, we're doing, like, this isn't changing. Nothing I do now changes this. So let's just go for it.
That's very zen.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what happened afterwards?
Afterwards, I just had like, so I ended up having, this was what, a month ago? Yeah, this was like a month. Oh. I ended up being in the hospital for 6 nights, which was not planned. I was having issues with my gallbladder, and then I went in, and then it had become a slightly bigger deal that could affect my liver. For reference, there's a number – I had had blood work done the week before for something separate, and they were like, well, this number here, you were at like 80, which is actually a little high, but fine. When you came into the hospital, it was at 660, and I was like, that's not good. And they were like, yeah, no, that's real bad. They're like, so I ended up staying in the hospital for 6 nights and dealing with all that. And then after like, so for the first 3 days I couldn't eat, but they didn't do anything to me because they were like letting my body clear out before they like did it. I had 2 different procedures, but I felt fine. So I was like, oh, I'm just here. Like this is, I'm sleeping. I'm not even drinking water. But I felt 100% normal. I was like walking around doing stuff. And then they did the surgeries. And then the reality of like, oh, I'm in a hospital. This has not been like a fun trip. This is like a reality. Like, oh, shit, I could have died. Oh, like, I probably wasn't going to. But like every time you go under, there is a chance. Like, so all that hit me post. So like right as I was like cut open and all jacked up and I was like, oh, no, this is the like it was a very kind of intense awakening to the realities of the situation all hit at once. But it was fine. It's fine. You like grow through it, then you're fine.
Yeah,
you know? Most people are fine. Most people, most of the time, are fine. So that's the upside.
Mm-hmm. Until that one person, that one time.
You know, it's gonna happen. I'm constantly like, death is just part of life. It's just a thing that's gonna. It's a thing that's going to literally happen to everybody. And I might as well get good with it and be like, yeah, that's going to happen to my adorable 11-year-old niece is one day going to pass away. That's going to happen. And that's okay. That's just a reality. And that for me, that's very like cool. Cause then when it does happen, I'm like, it's sad, but that's a thing. This isn't a surprise. So I'm that feels like it kind of helped, but also my girlfriend hates it because God's like, we're all gonna die one day. It doesn't make me fun.
That seems so romantic, though. You don't just like pillow talk, like, okay, babe, guess what?
I put on Interview with a Vampire, and then I say, we're all gonna pass away one day, and then
I mean,
and then you just fall asleep.
And we fall asleep, and we fall asleep, maybe forever. No, but it wasn't even. But even someone who I feel like I've like prepped myself for that, when the reality of mine came around, I'm like, no, I'm not. It's not. You know, it's like very.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's called survival instinct, and I think that's probably a positive. Yeah.
It'd be horrible if like I was like going in for gallbladder surgery. Pretty routine. And I'm like, you know, if it goes wrong, it goes wrong, everybody. That may be a sign of other stuff I need to get looked at.
When they took out my, turns out, very healthy appendix, I definitely asked the surgeon quite a few times, like, hey, this is a routine procedure, right? Like, you've done this before, right? Like, a bunch, like a lot. Like, how many people live? Like, most people?
I'm sure. They usually take someone's appendix out when they do gallbladder surgery, and they didn't for me. And it's they'll just take them both out at once because they're like, we're already in there, and the only thing your appendix can do is explode. So they're usually like, let's just get it out. But they, for me, they're like, But it sucks that you didn't have to get it. I kept saying, let's have fun in there to everyone in advance of mine. To deal with like my anxiety, like, cause I was nervous. So if you want to see a surgeon be really knocked off guard, be like, hey man, have fun in there. And they do not know how to answer.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume they would pull your hand up, the one that's got the IVs going into it, just high five. You're right.
They were like one dude was like, okay. And then he stopped and he looked back like, did he say what I think he said? And I was like finger gunning him. Yeah, so I'm hoping maybe they like tied a fun knot somewhere. I don't know. I'm never going to get to see anything.
Yeah. Did you hear about the surgeon who used to cauterize their initials into like.
That's so messed up. But also,
organs and stuff. What?
If he does a good job, I don't mind him signing his. Like, I'm like, first of all, obviously you can't do that for a number of reasons. It's someone's body you have to respect. But I think he should have been asking people, being like, hey, if I crush this, can I just put my little initials inside of you? I would love that. It would be incredible. I would have been like, yeah, dude, do it.
I think I would be like, let's go over the parameters of crushing it, though.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you like, nick something that's not supposed to be nicked. No.
Initials. That's your incentive as the surgeon, beyond the money, because I know you guys don't care about that. Here's the real goal. But I would also have been like, can you like put like the map like to the Declaration of Independence on like the inside? Like, so one day if I die and somehow my guts are exposed, someone's like, does Winston have a treasure map like inside of his abdomen? That'd be incredible.
Yeah, man. Also, who would discover that? Like the mortician, I guess, would be the one just being like.
Just imagine the hubbub that would happen if when you pass, they are doing, because they don't do an autopsy in everyone, but you request an autopsy. Whenever I pass, make sure they do a full autopsy. And inside, they find a treasure. Someone, it doesn't matter what it goes to, someone's going to follow it. You just have a bunch of coordinates on the inside of your tummy.
Yes.
Oh. Now I'm kind of shit, how can I get that done?
Do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It turns out just to be geocaching, and it's just a lunchbox with like little action figures.
Yeah. Those are the coordinates for Newark International Airport. I don't know what we're supposed to do there.
Get on a flight, man. You have your whole life ahead of you. I'm dead.
Yeah. He sent me to the like afterthought New York airport for this.
That's good. Leave people with a puzzle, you know, like a map to a puzzle to a mystery.
Yes.
I want my funeral to be a lot like a bunch of people watching Lost. So that's really the goal.
Everybody's saying, like, does this need to be as long as it is? Yeah. I'm intrigued. Yeah. And then walking away going, is he dead?
What? Yeah. My coffin is in the shape of a hatch. So it does start to make sense. It all really starts coming together.
And it takes like your niece, who's the one who's got like the curiosity mind, to open up the hatch. And
Now I'm fully, I want to start like giving people like small things that have like little tidbits on that mean nothing. Don't mean a thing. Man, that'd be so fun. I had a friend, this is a very tangential story real quick.
Great.
Mm-hmm. A friend in college had a costume party, not at Halloween. And he told everybody a different theme. And it was the coolest party I've ever been to. Because some people, and he would repeat them sometimes. So there might be like five people who were superheroes. There might be another five people who were great historical figures. And that feels like that, where it's like, makes no sense, but is fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a great funeral right there. That's also, I just thought, can we make little messages that go inside of pistachios? Do you know what I'm saying? So you crack open a pistachio, and there's your little message.
Ooh, I like that idea. Mm-hmm. I like that idea.
Is it like a rolled up like piece of paper, or are you writing it on the nut?
Ooh, okay. Okay. I was thinking it was just like a tiny flat piece of paper because, so you slip it in somehow.
Oh, I imagined it was written on the inside of the shell, and then you're reattach it, like you're re-gluing shells around the nuts.
Okay. I like
that,
too.
These are all good options.
These are good options. I am going to question, like, is the adhesive going to be, like, edible? Are we
You don't eat the shell? Are y'all eating pistachio shells? Am I?
How do you get your fiber?
Yeah. you just take a handful of pistachios and you just throw them in the air. Yeah. What lands in the mouth. That's it.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Who says you chew? You just swallow, you go about your day, and you hope your gallbladder can take care of it. Yeah.
Well, not me. There's no more pistachio shells in my life. Those days are behind me.
No, but I do. Okay, I do occasionally suck on the pistachio shell if I need like that extra hit of salt.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, but this is what I'm saying. If there is adhesive on there, then we gotta make sure that the adhesive
needs to be edible,
or
it's like maybe it's sugar or something like that,
or gluten free like at the very least.
Yeah. You get your sugar, you get your salt.
I love the idea of like,
and then a little message.
Like people go into your funeral, they're all like, all my family is grieving. And then on top of it, I put in like a bunch of like like it's like an escape room. Like it's something horrible. Yes. If you don't figure this out, you should be stuck in here with me, my dead body forever. Like it's that kind of thing. I think would be really fun. Like I'm big on like funeral. I want my funeral to be fun if possible. So let's
What I'm hearing from you is your funeral is going to take place in a basement. With one door exit, everybody gets locked in as they have to solve a series of problems. Yeah.
In my mind, my body is the door. Like my coffin is the door. You have to get past me. Because it's gotta have some emotional resonance, you know? Like you have to move past me, both physically and emotionally, to get out of this room. No, for years I thought my funniest joke would be I really wanted to have and now that I'm thinking about like, oh, I guess this is kind of like a weird like mental health thought because I would think about my funeral. I wanted to serve barbecue at my funeral. And then if I could have a video of me announcing the barbecue was me halfway through the thing. And of course, not true, but I love the idea that everyone would be like for a good minute having to think, did they just consume me?
And you could be like, if it's good enough for Jesus to be consumed.
Yeah. I'd be like, I'm so happy you guys enjoyed me, both in person and in person today. Like, you know, I could really, really.
Can you please do the ba-dum-tsing as well? You know, own. Yeah.
Yeah. I would just, I feel like I would definitely end it though on like, just kidding. Am I? Like I love the idea of like everyone being like, oh no, what do we do with all this food? Like that's a normal thought people with not mental stuff going on have, right? That's just a normal human thought.
Completely normal thought, but Yeah. Let's leave the normies out of it, because my thought was, do you think they would all save the bones then if they knew that, if they thought that it was you, and try and piece you back together to form, wait for it, a treasure map?
I hope so. That would be incredible. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I would want them to cremate those bones and then put them out, and they're just like, they're just distributing some pig. Like, it's like, well, we're going to.
And
we're
they put it back together and they're like, this is an animal, right? We're all this in agreement.
This is a Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is obviously a T-Rex.
Yeah. This, I believe, with the rows of teeth, we're looking at a great white.
That would be so funny. That'd be
really... Anyway, welcome to the Normie podcast, where we talk about normal things and we're all normal.
What is normal?
What is normal? Seriously. Did, by any chance, in junior high, there was something called like, oh my God, what is it when you're a teenager, you go through puberty? It was called Puberty, Nightmare on Puberty Street.
Okay.
And it was a series of performers that would come in and do little musical numbers about puberty. And they had like a jungle gym, like on wheels, that they would kind of like spin around and climb on and sing like that. And one of the songs was called What is Normal? And the response was, Am I Normal? And that's all I remember about that. But it was bad. It was real bad.
I can't imagine. Because you know the people do – the performers in that are self-aware humans. They know it's not great, right? Like they're aware. Right? But I'm sure like they're getting paid. And I bet at that time probably pretty decently. And they're like, well, it's a job. Gig's a gig, man. Gig's a gig.
Yeah. Like, 1,000%.
Like, man, that's – God, wow.
They're like, Juilliard was not cheap.
Yeah.
And I got to pay off these loans.
That's,
And there was a Q&A at the end. And one of the cool guys in my school, you know, shot up, raised his hand. And they were like, yes, you know, this is a free open space. Like, let's get into conversation about bodies and whatever else. And he said, can I see your dick? And then, you know, everybody erupted in laughter.
So. Honestly, good bit. That's very funny. Yeah. Makes me laugh. Solid. Like, years later, I'm laughing about that. That's very funny.
And again, as a performer, are you just like trying to hold back from laughter? Or are you so tired of hearing this question at every junior high you go to?
Yeah. Oh, man. Like, God, that would be incredible. I think it's – I have a theory that like those things only didn't work because they weren't like, there's just like, they're talking to kids the wrong way, you know, they're like pandering to them. And like, because I have like nieces and nephews, and I'm like, if you just talk to them like they're people, like they have brains and can think for themselves, they're actually like, they will engage. Like all the stuff they wanted from that could happen, but they just didn't. You can't approach it like, hey kid, what's the haps, puberty, like you can't. No, just talk to them like, hey, how's it going? I went through what you're going through. Yeah. It sucks, right? Like, and they'll be like, yeah, it sucks. Oh, man. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, man. But also if you go and your voice gets real high when you talk to them. Hi. Oh, do you have questions about your period? Get away from
it. I mean, I went to Catholic school, so I don't know any parts of the human body or how any of it works, but sure.
Yeah. They didn't. Oh boy, I am just being sacrilegious today. They didn't point to the body of Christ and then teach you that way.
No. They said, don't touch any of that. Yes. And you're like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
That's, and they're like, those nuns, they're Mary damned. He's theirs. And that was it.
Yeah, what's the deal? The nuns are married to Jesus, but what are monks doing? They're brothers?
There's like brothers. Brothers are all priests. So they're they say they're married. I don't know if they actually, God, it's creepy if they are. I don't think they, I don't know. I feel like that's something we all say, but maybe isn't realistically true. I went to the Vatican 2 years ago, that same Italy trip. And I was like, I forgot priests and nuns existed until I got here. I forgot these were things.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
There's so many of them here.
Yeah.
They're running around. And I'm like, oh yeah. That's just a part of life. It's a thing people become. Weird.
It's so fascinating. Like, the women have to be married to Christ, but the guys just get to be bros with Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Mm. It's a bad system. It's not a great system.
Well, that's surprise, the only surprise. Organized religion yeah. that's a problem. The rest of them are.
Yeah, yeah. The rest are great. I was raised, my childhood best friends. This is just a non sequitur, has nothing to do with anything. My childhood best friend's dad was a Catholic priest. There were a limited number of Catholic priests who were Lutherans first and then were allowed to become Catholic when the Catholic priesthood really needed priests. So I grew up in a very weird situation where my priest was also my best friend's dad. And like, I would like go fishing and see him at home. And like, he wasn't a priest in my mind, you know?
So, okay. Were they still married? Was he still married?
Yeah. Yeah. They were married with kids, Catholic priests that were let in, I believe in the 80s. And there were like, I'm not kidding. It was like maybe 15 of them total. And he was one of them.
Whoa. Yeah. That seems like an elite squad.
Yeah, it was very weird. And it was just like we need them. And Lutherans essentially, the only difference in belief is like one thing with communion and whether or not priests can be married. So like, get on in here, buddy. Bring your 8 kids in here. Because of course, you know, like,
yeah,
they have a lot of kids.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah. A lot of religions are really into the kids thing. Yeah.
Well, if I could go out there and make more people to like my sketch team, I would do that.
Yeah, the proselytizing of the sketch group is tough. Yeah.
If comics figured out that we could just like generate our fans, we have all the bits and pieces to make them. Man, our shows would be a lot more full. It'd be pretty great.
Yep, they would be.
Probably louder, though, as your audience is younger. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah, and that cycle is how you get to having, like, the, hey, kids, what's your puberty like? That's yes, it.
Exactly.
That's that process.
Hey, kids, what's your puberty like? Oh, God. I mean, I just assume that those performers drank heavily every night, you know, as they go from junior high to junior high.
I hope they were living rough. I hope they were on the road. Like, they're like really traveling around the country doing that. Mm-hmm. I respect it. I think that what a fun, I guarantee you there's wild story. Because I was also like, they must have been so bored so often. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, we didn't all have smartphones in our pockets and they're just like, yeah, man, we're just here. Where are we today?
Yeah.
We're
Podunk Town number 12.
Mobile. We're in Mobile today. All right, man. We're in Tulsa next week. Like, it's like I would, I think that probably sounds great. Like for like 23. If there's any of them like in their 30s, it's like, oh brother, you got to move on. You got to do something else.
Yeah. Yeah. You made some bad choices in life. Yeah.
Yeah. The people performing that are not the people you necessarily want talking to your kids about puberty.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this isn't like a bunch of desperate actors.
Yeah, this is we found a group of aspiring med students who were also aspiring actors to do this. It's the perfect group.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Unfortunately, their medical training is all for naught because the only question they ever get is,
that's so funny. I'm going to be thinking about that. Yep. What's wild is that is a joke that's so good that I will now be thinking about it. Fully like 3 steps removed from it. That's so funny. That's so funny.
I mean, yeah. It was like the timing was great. It was, yeah, it was pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I felt
and where
so
is he now?
Bad for the, I think he's a
Jimmy
commercial
Fallon?
Real estate agent. Oh,
okay. Of course he is.
Those guys are funny. Those guys are classically funny. It's a funny job.
Yeah, he's just bits, improv. Yeah, but I felt so bad for the performers at the time because I was just like, boy, howdy, this is their life. And then I was like, oh, boy, this is their life. Oh. Like if I don't play my cards right, this could be my life.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, as a junior high kid, I was like, I hate junior high kids. Like I want out of here.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Maybe they should play it the other way where it's like, this is what could happen to you.
Yeah.
If you had like,
you know, you don't take your puberty like that, seriously. You know? You're going to become one of these.
It's like scared straight, but
yeah. What am I supposed to do? This is just the thing that's happening to you. Get it together.
You better learn your anatomy, okay? Top to bottom. Or you could be up here next week.
Where's your uterus, pipsqueak? I don't know.
Point to your fallopian tube.
Yeah, that's really funny. That's really funny, scared straight of that type of thing.
Junior high.
I know. So Winston, so with something that we like to talk about is our work and how, you know, sometimes how mental health and work happen or not happen. Is there something... Yeah, you're pointing, but I can't, like, I'm forming a sentence and questioning my abilities.
I was pointing at you like, yeah, this is great. Keep going. I like it.
Oh.
Go have it.
Well, I just wanted to know, like, how you overcome any sort of anxiety about your work as a comedian or a writer or anything that you're doing, performing.
I don't know if I do very well, honestly. Like when I was doing, so when I did improv, I still, like, to this day, I'll still get super nervous before every single, I've actually, I was just thinking about it, I'm like, man, I wonder how much better of an improviser I would have been had I had Ativan when I was, like, trying to do it more, like, just a little bit to take the edge off. I bet it would have really helped. Mostly I try to do things enough that then they become normalized and then I don't think about it, because otherwise it will kind of consume me. Or give myself enough. I keep myself so busy that I can't ever, like, actually take the time to be like, oh, this is a big thing that's happening. With a lot of, like, with performance still, occasionally with, like, music stuff, I'll still get nervous occasionally before big things. But in general, it's all just so normalized that, and the other half of this is, or I'll just drink a bunch of beer beforehand, you know, just self-medicate. But yeah, and then the ADD part is just like, I try to make myself as accountable to as many people as possible and keep myself as organized as possible, so that, like, if, you know, like, if I'm sweating all the small stuff, then the big stuff starts taking care of itself, which is not necessarily healthy, but it does work for me.
Yeah. And so is it, was the ADHD or ADD diagnosis recent?
No,
or
was it? I was on, like, I mean, at like 15. So it was in the height of it, but it really did hit pretty hard for me. Is like, This is definitely a thing going on. And then I quit taking my medication in college because it formed me. I was two different people, it felt like. I was like, the me on ADD medication was like, could write a paper if I needed to and do the stuff. But the me off it was fun. So I, like, was like, okay, I got to figure out other coping mechanisms. So I haven't actually been medicated for it in like 20 years.
But you're doing well.
I'm doing okay. So I could be doing better. Like, there are times where, like, it's a lot of, like I have, I guess I can't, I'm trying to think if there's anything that I can actually show. I'm a person who has, like, a lot of, like, I have lines and lines of post-it notes in order everywhere, like, always, like to-do lists, like, this type of stuff, because it's a lot of finding, like, oh, ripping a post-it note off and crunching it up satisfies my brain, and then I'll do whatever to get to that point, and it keeps me organized. So, and then now my current, I'm editing for a small media company, and, like, it's so much direct, like, here's a task. This needs to be done in an hour. Take care of it. That it's like quick hits of that, which is great, which is perfect for me. It's like, it's not 2 months of work leading up to something.
Yes.
Yeah. Those long deadlines are the devil.
Yeah.
Because I won't do it until the day before. I just know it.
Of course.
I've also gotten very good with being like, someone would be like, hey, isn't that thing due? And I'm like, yeah, sounds like I'm going to do it 2 hours before it's due. Why am I going to, I'm not going to stress about it until then. If I know I'm going to do that, let's just do it.
Yes.
And that's exactly what Gabby, your ADHD therapist, told you about to do, right?
Yeah. She said procrastination is part of the process. So don't beat yourself. You could beat yourself up for it, or you could just be like, yeah, it's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like two, for me, it's two, very much two buckets. It's like half the time I'm like, let's just do it now and I'll get it done. And then the other half of the time I'm like, I'm just not, okay, fine. Then it's just not going to happen till it needs to. And then that's it. And then if it's not good, then I'll redo it later. Like, that's what's going to be. So yeah.
So relatable. Yes.
Yeah. Very relatable. And also, like, no judgment. Like, so you're not it's like there's a little bit of a criticism that I heard in when you were talking about your mentals and being able to handle them well or not well or not doing well. You know, have you checked in with that kind of judgment to yourself in terms of?
Yeah, I try not to. It's what I mean, well or not well. Like for me, it's like. Like, well, it's like always, it's always like very subjective as to like how it affects me. Like, am I happy or not? Is it helping me or hurting me? Like, like, because sometimes like, yeah, you can do a thing in a different way that someone might not do it, but I don't want it to be impacting my life in a negative way. So like anything like that, I would be like, that's not good. But also what is a negative way is fully up to me to decide. So I try not to like pass judgment on stuff. And I'm like, I do think I'm very lucky in that, like, I have like a pretty good coping. Like I have like social anxiety, but I also cope with it really well by being too much. I turn it on extra, which works for me. But also it's like, makes it very, like my partner has brought up when we first started moved in together, she was just like, and like we'd been dating for a long time. So she knew I wasn't like fully on all the time. But I remember the first time she saw me, like, she was like, oh, you're like, I'm like, no, I'm super introverted when I'm not this, when I'm not huge. So I'm trying to be more okay with like, okay, no, there's just going to be balances to everything and not, not passing judgment on. If also, if I'm not doing well, being like, okay, I'm not doing well. And I'm also in therapy routinely, which really helps. Like I found it's not even the going to therapy sometimes. It's the writing stuff down to talk about in therapy will make me be like, that's what's happening. Cool. Because I have... I'll forget in a minute. Like, oh, this thing, this huge, like I talked to my therapist. I was like, oh yeah, by the way, I had surgery. And she was like, what? And I was like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. So I write everything down, try to, as I'm, as the weeks go on. And then that keeps like, writing it down is like the first step of that. So that like, yeah, it's like, it, it's like a pre-therapy where I'm like, okay, cool. That's what's happening. Oh, well now I know that's what's happening. Oh, well now I don't need to like stress about it or whatever.
Actually really, that's a great idea. That's a great idea because I constantly forget about things to talk to my psychiatrist about. And I feel like if I did write it down, maybe that would help me instead of at the end going, oh, wait, there was this one problem.
Well, I just don't like when I'm in the moment, I'm just like, oh, I'm really feeling this or, oh, this thing really upset me. I know me that I'll just like it's, we don't remember bad things and we try, our brains want to forget negative stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I have to, I might as well like, you know, it takes me 2 seconds to get, or even saying to my phone, like, hey, take a note of this and then move on. Helps me a lot. Yeah. It's made a huge difference in my therapy.
That's great. Do you guys do any like kind of therapies, like homework practices or anything?
We do.
Like,
wait, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh no. I was going to say like ERP, exposure response prevention, or ACT.
Or my therapist says a lot of those things and I don't remember. Like we, I think she does. I think it's, I think CBT, I think is a thing that she has like is working on, but it's mostly like, I'm pretty good about being like, hey, this thing sucks and I should probably push myself to do it more. Or what, you know, like, and she's like, yep, that sounds good. I'm like, okay, cool. Like I find for me, therapy is 90% because mine's like really very specifically like dealing with a couple emotional things and other stuff. It's a lot of, I'm like just talking about a thing, just forcing yourself to have time to talk about stuff is like half of it. Setting aside time to genuinely think about where my mental health is and where my headspace is and process shitty things or good things that are happening is most of the job. And usually all, I mean, we all know that there's like times where you talk to a therapist and you're like, well, I've been here for 15 minutes. I guess we're done. Right. You know, but yeah, it's mostly like when people are like, why do you do that? I'm like, cause it's just, you work out, this is just working out for like your emotions and your brain. That's purely like, it's just setting aside a time for it. So we don't do a lot of that, a lot of homework stuff, but it will come up that, you know, it's mostly, hey, drink water and go on walks. That's actually, yeah, that's what it is. It's like, make sure you drink enough water, make sure you're doing yoga or going on walks. Cause surprise, surprise, when you do those things, you feel way better. And
so true.
Yeah.
Also it's really so annoying.
It's very annoying how like making, cause I hate working out. I hate doing anything, but getting just sweating, you just do, your body starts, it, for me, my body starts, it's night and day, and it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
It's so stupid that a walk helps makes me feel better.
Yes. But
it does.
Yes. And
it does. It really does.
It's like I can see the list of annoying people who have told me to do that throughout my life, you know, and the fact that I'm doing it now and it's helping, I'm like, well, I'm never telling them.
Yeah. Oh, no. No one can ever know. No one can ever know. Walks, or like I got real into yoga over COVID and like was doing it every morning. And that was like, it was just like, and for me, it's also, I'm sure this is like ADD stuff. It's like routine is everything. Like really having like an actual framework for what my day is going to look like. This is my office right now. And this room exists. I mean, it's a room. It doesn't exist for this person, but it's my office because I was like, I was working from home and I was kind of like all over the place. And I was like, I need an office. I need a room that I get up and I go down to, and then I go to work. And like there's stairs, like for all of COVID, I would like wake up and like shower and be in new clothes and then put my bag on and then walk down the stairs and like have water.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, I'm at work. And it really makes a huge difference in like how my brain works and how effective I am and everything. It's annoying. It's so stupid. Plus.
Yes, totally. It's like this balance between the routine and also one of the joys I think of ADD or ADHD is the spontaneity.
Yep.
But it's like you got to have that balance. Otherwise, it's just chaos.
Yeah. I'll get lost in the. I still try to have a day, if I can, a day a week where like nothing, where fully unstructured is the best. Like, not even, I'm not meeting people for food. I'm not doing any. This day is gonna get thrown away, fully wasted. I might even watch a bunch of TV I don't like. Let's just like really do nothing with the day, because like that's also, I'm like, I can have a very productive week, but then I also need a day where like nothing happens, and I'll be kind of upset at the end. I'll be like, oh, I didn't do anything today, and I'm like, no, that's the plan. That's why you did this. That's the whole point.
Yeah, it's no, but doing nothing is something.
It really is.
It is productive. Yeah.
I am so impressed by you, dude. You've got it dialed on a lot of levels, my friend.
I hope. We'll see. Watch me fully fall off a cliff tomorrow. But no, these things, I don't know. It just seems like, it's like, but it's so easy for that. Like I was also, you know, I was unemployed for most of last year and like had plenty of those like, oh, things are falling apart. Oh, okay. I got to put these things back together. Like, oh, the couch is not a workspace. That's not where work happens. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
But yeah, structure. That's it.
Structure. Yeah.
Structure and Ativan.
Yes. That's it. That's the other sponsor of the show is structure.
Yeah. We need it. Keeps buildings up.
That's right.
Keeps our schedules in line.
Yeah. Keeps the mental structure moving forward instead of like dripping out of our brains.
Do y'all feel like sometimes like when I feel like I'll have, you know, it's comes and goes, but I've had a couple bad anxiety, like the days of it where you fully lose a day to it. And it's like, this is just, wow, I'm just going to feel like nothing's ever going to work right for this day. And that's just going to happen. But when those happen, I try to do the absurdity thing of like, or I'll a lot of times be like, you didn't feel like this yesterday. And you know, you're not going to feel like this tomorrow. Mm. Like a lot of times I'll be like, what's different between today and yesterday? And the answer is always nothing. And I'm like, okay, so it's my brain. We're talking about a brain thing. The same way as like, if my arm was sore, I wouldn't be like pissed off at my arm. I'd just be like, my arm's sore. Okay. What do I do to make my arm not sore? How do I comfort my arm? Or maybe I just put my arm in a place where it can rest. So I'll like try to be like, oh, today's a brain day. There's nothing I can do about it. Okay, well, you know what? Let's just like give it a break. And, you know, if I can drink a bunch of water and watch a dumb show, then that's what's going to. But it's another part of your body. Like, I think we forget that and we'll be like, and you're not in control. You're not in no way in control of it the same way a bunch of other things are for me.
You do a fair amount of like talking back to whatever it is, the OCD, the anxiety, the da 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 da, which is really cool. Because it I mean, from my perspective of therapy and whatever else, it's like if you say the thing out loud or you talk back to it, it's like putting distance between you and the thing that's causing suffering, and allowing yourself just that much space can then put it all in perspective. And I just think it's fall off the cliff tomorrow, but right now you're being very impressive.
It feels good. It's like, I think it's important to, like, it's not like all of the mental stuff feels like it can be like, this isn't a choice anyone made. No one woke up and went, oh man, I would love to be so anxious that I can't get out of bed today. Or I'd love to be so depressed that I can't, but, and that's not to say, I think, cause then like everyone puts like, then there's these value judgments on it and there's all this like, oh, well, and sometimes like, if you're not addressing what you're doing, that's one thing. Like if you're like not actively trying, understanding that you have to deal with this thing, like the same way if I was born with like a club foot or something, I can't control that, but I can control like how I respond to it and how I advance through it. I think it's all the exact same. So I don't need to blame myself for feeling like shit because I got drunk and man, I was dumb or whatever. Like, you know, oh, actually that I can't, that's actually on me. That one's on me. But like, if I wake up and I just feel like, oh, I'm never going to like be able to do X, Y, or Z, that's not real. So it's okay. It's okay to be like, okay, well, that's just what you're feeling. Eat some ice cream, you know, like, and you'll still feel it. I'm not going to really help, but maybe don't have bourbon. Maybe don't, you know. And talking back to it for me really works. That's like a very, like a thing I have to do for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Heather, do you have any other questions, my friend?
No, I think we talked a lot.
Yeah.
And it was good.
Sorry, I'm long-winded.
No. It just
No.
I feel like we could keep talking for forever, and I'm like, oh boy, we're gonna have to make this like a three-parter episode.
I know.
So, you know, if you come up with other stuff, you're more than welcome to come back on the show.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Yes,
I'll go develop some new issues, and I'll bring them back.
Yeah, or you know, if you have creative stuff you want to promote, you could also do that too.
Yeah. Or if you make some discoveries in mental health stuff too, you know, then, you know,
I like or all not. The new drug I'm high. You guys don't know that I'm actually paid by Ativan. So
exactly.
Next time I'll be like, it's actually Ativan. We all call Ativan the old Xanax. Cause that's really where it's, like, you know, it's like,
yeah, exactly. And then we're going to have a problem. Cause I'll finally get sponsorship from Xanax and then it's going to be like a thing. Uh-huh. And it's going to be like Sharks and the Jets. Yeah.
This is a payola situation.
Yes. Yes. Or it's a new Coke and classic Coke
Crystal
situation,
Ativan.
You know?
Ativan clear.
Yeah.
Wait, don't say, okay, Heather, take that out of the podcast because that's a good business idea. We're making Crystal Ativan.
Crystal Ativan?
Listen, you're in LA. Can you think of like all the people who like swear by crystals and then also the Venn diagram of those with Ativan? Come on, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, if it was like, oh, you're just saying like, it's just a crystal. Like I have a crystal that's in the shape of like a crystal, but if you just lick it, it's like a good hit of Ativan.
Yeah.
That's really something. That's kind of something. That would be great.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's then, like I leave it like a ring pop kind of thing.
Yes.
Like, or no, one of those, you know, where, like, no, like,
Mm-hmm. And then I'm wondering if TSA would like get wise to it, but then I'm like, does TSA take away crystals if you try and bring a crystal on a plane?
It's maybe how sharp is the crystal is the question.
Okay, fair.
Although I flew last weekend with a like fully had like a razor blade like for my shaving that I didn't know was in my thing, and I have TSA pre-check and I'm like, are they not checking that much? There was like a legit razor blade in my not a problem.
Yes,
not a problem.
Oh wow.
Yes.
And I look like I'm Arab. They're supposed to catch me.
I flew to Hawaii and back and then unpacked and realized I had brought a 6-inch switchblade with me the plane. Not even in the checked luggage. On the plane. Damn. I get that.
It's all theater.
Quite privilege, I guess. Yeah. Ugh. They're like, she doesn't know how to use that. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say you had a Gatling gun or something. I had a full assault rifle in my bag.
I had three and they only caught one, still let me on the plane.
Yeah.
I don't know what still we're doing with TSA. So I think that's a good place to leave it. Bringing weapons on planes.
That's the right. Yep. Natural. Yeah.
Distributing.
We started at planes. We came all the way back to planes.
Yeah. It's perfect. We're the good callbacks.
Callbacks. That's our other name of the podcast.
Yeah. I don't know what I was saying there. I was enjoying all of this.
Mm-hmm. As am I. That's exactly what I was just going to say. Winston, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been so fun to be here. This has been a blast.
Good. I'm glad that Ativan is making you say that.
Oh, I have not had Ativan in... Actually, it's been a minute. I haven't had it. I thought I was going to need it on these last flights, and I didn't. So, yeah, it's been a while. It's been at least 3 weeks.
That's great.
I think they injected me with some in the hospital. Maybe that was it. So, it's been a minute. It's been a hot minute.
Oh my gosh. Okay, just real quick, the injecting of Ativan. I had a 4-hour panic attack once and then ended up in the ER and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. But they did the injection of Ativan, and within 15 minutes, my life went from like, well, I need to stop being on this mortal plane to everything's great. Let's all love each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the best. I feel that same way about morphine. I got morphine when I first went to the emergency room this time. Because like I was in a significant amount of pain, and I don't know if you've never had it, you're really missing out. It's truly, I was like, I get it why they gave this to the dudes like who are about to die in World War II. Cause this would make you feel fine about it. You're like, yeah, whatever. This is the best.
So that's the closing message you want everybody to end on, like come up with some kind of quote unquote gallbladder issue.
Lie about what you're doing, pretend they don't know, and just hold your belly and say it hurts so bad, and then get some morphine. Get yours. That's what
Winston loves morphine.
proudly loves morphine.
I think that's a perfect place to end it. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye, everyone.
Yeah. Bye, everybody. Bye, 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 bye.
Bye, bye, bye.
Welcome to the end of the show. This is Gabby Blackman.
And this is Heather Nye.
Thank you for listening to Comically Exposed. We're just a little show with two creators who edit and produce each episode. We appreciate all your support.
If you like what you heard, please follow us on Instagram at comicallyexp.podcast. That's comicallyexp.podcast.
Oh, and check out our website at comicallyexposed.com. That's one word, comicallyexposed.com.
Where you can contact us by text or even leave a voice message.
Or subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. New episodes drop every other Wednesday.
Also, special thanks to Track Club and Goldenfinch for providing the music.
Thanks for listening. And hey, everybody, today is a great day to expose yourself. Okay, until next time.
In your face, Miriam.